What's up, guys? This is Zach, and you have just stepped into the dark blue. I have been learning so much lately about how to manage the things that we consume and how they affect our bodies. That mind-body-spirit connection is just so important. And I just had a really great conversation with Zach Wright, MD. He is a functional medicine practitioner, a board-certified physician, and just has some really amazing information about how to make our bodies better, how to heal, how to be preventative with our wellness. And so this is going to be a great conversation. I'm really excited to share this with you guys. So settle in and get ready for some learning, some education about your body and your mind and all of those things. As always, I want to give a huge thanks to our homies and partners at Alamo Botanicals and Sheath Underwear for helping us make this happen. This is our fourth year of the podcast, and just really grateful for everything that those organizations do for ours. And with that said, the short film that Sheath Underwear sponsored last year just won some awards. Some short film awards, which is pretty exciting. If you haven't listened to my episode with Luke Adams from Story Reel Studios, go back and check that out. He's just doing some great things with his film Into the Dark Blue, and get on YouTube, search Into the Dark Blue on the Sheath Underwear page, and you'll find that film as well. So enjoy that, and also enjoy this coming episode with Zach Wright. Here we go. What's up, guys? Welcome to the Dark Blue. I'm hanging out with Zach Wright today. He is a board certified physician. He does functional medicine, and I've been looking forward to this conversation because this is something that's been really big on my mind lately. Just learning more about how the medical industry works and how we can be preventative as far as our health goes and that sort of thing. So we're gonna have some really good conversation around that stuff today. So you know, we're not in the hospital later for worse things. So yeah, this is gonna be a pretty in-depth conversation, but it totally valuable information. So stick with us and learn a little bit. How you doing, Zach?
Great. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm pretty good. I'm always happy to be in the room with another Zach.
For sure.
At least it's a CH, you know, those CK Zachs. I don't want to mess with them.
Yeah, they're weirdos. I mean, honestly, you have to have the silent letters. Well, I guess they're both silent. Ours are actually incorrect. Really? I don't know. I guess they came from, I don't know what language it is.
Maybe we should all
Greek, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, I think maybe Zechariah, right? It's something biblical, right?
Yeah, in a way.
derivative anyway. So we could just totally drop the H and the K and just all of us be Z-A-C.
Yeah. Well, then my last name is Wright, so half those letters are silent as well. So that's not very helpful either. So I could just literally like half my name and it would have been easier in first grade or whatever, kindergarten.
Right. Are you originally a Zachary though, like I am?
I am, yeah, Zachary, okay. Yeah.
All right. In the same boat, gotcha. It's just extra letters we don't need. Zach works. So, hey, you know, Zach is over in the UK right now. Just in checking it out, seeing how he likes it over there. And I'm really super jealous, but I'm going to live vicariously through him today. We're going to do a UK day with our beverages. So I happen to have some UK beer in my fridge, and Zach grabbed himself something over there too. What do you have?
And I found this at the store, like a real Brit would do. I went to the store and found this beer, and it is a McEwen's Champion award-winning premium beer. So it got the International Brewing Award 2019 gold medal winner. So I thought that's probably pretty good. Plus it has alcohol 7.3% by volume, which is also good if you're going to drink one beer and do a podcast, right?
For sure, yeah. That looks like
an Raising a glass too. Since 1856. So this is a premium beer. It looks like a, I don't even know what kind of beer it is. It just says premium beer. I'm assuming it's some sort of lager, pilsner. Looks light. Yeah, we'll let you know.
I think in the UK, but, they have beer. They don't have styles. It's just beer.
Just beer?
I'm kidding.
Fair enough. Just alcohol, you know, just whatever. Yeah. They just call it a drink.
It's just fermented.
So anyway, that's what I, yeah. That's what I have.
Cool. Yeah, I've got a hazy pale ale from Northern Monk. It's their Faith hazy pale. So I'm going to drink a little Faith today. Sounds good.
Nice. Let's open them up.
Yeah, let's get them going. I'm excited.
When I first got here, we went to get fish and chips, as you do.
Of course.
And the lady was explaining how to pour my beer. She wanted to make sure that I poured it with a glass at a 45-degree angle so that I didn't mess it up. So,
teaching you the proper way.
As though, like, there's this understanding that Americans can't pour beer correctly, I guess. I don't know.
But we tend to get too excited, and we get way too much. Yeah. You know, it's like you get this massive. Let's see. This is a rare occasion where I get that perfect, like, inch and a half, like, just really nice.
It doesn't have enough. You can always just pour, like, some more drops from an altitude. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah. I'm no expert on beer.
Yeah, neither am I. I just enjoy it. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, I'm like pleasantly surprised by that.
Yeah.
This is it's a lot more refreshing than I thought it was going to be. I don't usually like IPAs these days, and it's a pale ale, but so it's a little less hoppy than a regular IPA would be. So it's nice. It just tastes kind of citrusy and summery, and I'm okay with it.
Nice. How's yours? Mine is quite bitter. It does not taste of hops at all. It is got a little bite to it.
A little bite? All right.
A little, I mean.
It looks dark.
A little bit. It's like a red, like an ale, yeah.
Pretty good.
Well, I don't know. I'm not good at this descriptive thing either. I like it. I mean,
does it taste like a fireplace on a fall day?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's not a spring summer beer, but yeah, it's good. I mean, it's very smooth.
Nice.
It's very full bodied and it's very complex, like the label says. So
cool. Yeah. I'm down with it. I wish I could try it, but you know, you're thousands of miles away. So
I do too. Yeah.
Hey, check this out. If you haven't tried Sheath underwear yet, I can tell you from experience, it will change your life. It's got not one, but two pouches for your bits and pieces. It's basically like upgrading from a studio apartment to a two-bedroom house for your junk. I won't wear anything else at this point. I've replaced my entire underwear drawer with Sheath. So if you want to try it out for yourself, you can get 25% off by going to sheathunderwear.com and use promo code DARKBLUE, all caps, DARKBLUE.
Well, hey, let's get into this. I'm like, I'm really excited about this topic because I've been learning a lot these days about a lot of lies that I feel like we're told by, you know, the food industry, the medical industry, all of these things, a lot of things that are kept from us, you know, and I'm trying to learn a lot more about how to be healthy, just in general, right? I grew up, both of us grew up in the 80s, we're both 1984, both of us grew up in the 80s and early 90s when there were a lot of convenience foods being made, a lot of very sugary packaged foods being made, and things that we just grew up thinking were normal. And you know, parents getting busier with work, both parents working in the household, and just trying to have things available that were easy to make. And so, you know, I think we ended up with a lot of really bad habits when they were starting to add a lot more chemicals and processing to our food, and we're starting to see the repercussions of it. And so I I'm really excited to hear your perspective on all that.
Yeah, I mean, I have lots of opinions. I'm going to try to be careful a little bit, I think. But I do want to dive into this with you. And it's something that I feel is really important, something that I feel very passionately about. I'm excited to sort of let people see behind the curtain a little bit and understand why things are the way they are a little bit more. I mean, and you know, my intention is just to tell you what I know to be true. And then if I don't know, I'll say, hey, I don't know. This is what I think or whatever. But I just want to, I'm excited about shedding some light, because I think a lot of the frustration is from confusion. And if I can clear some of those things up for people, I would be glad to do that.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. I worked for Amazon as a manager for about 5 years. And one of the biggest things I learned is how much people just want to know why they're doing something. And otherwise they're just going to keep doing what they know works, and they get angry if you ask them to do something else, if you don't tell them why.
That's inherent in all humans. I mean, I have a 5-year-old daughter and I have a 1-year-old daughter, and when kids, that we want to know why we're doing stuff. I mean, that's just inherent in our nature. And so, and adults are no different. Like, why am I doing that? Yep. If you can make someone understand something, then they're way more likely to do. I mean, they're not going to do it if they don't know why, pretty much in 100% of cases, just about. So, I'm with you. I mean, I have to know why as well. I mean, that's how everyone is. So I would love to be able to shed some light, and I'm excited to do it.
Cool. Sounds good. And you guys keep in mind, please, this isn't actual medical advice. We're really just trying to give you a framework for your own knowledge. And so, I emphasize the word framework there, because that's what Zach is all about, is building framework. And so we're really just here to kind of give you a starting point, so you can do your own research, talk to your own doctors, find your own way as far as maybe homeopathic or naturopathic doctors, however it works out best for you. But just want to plant the seed for you to start learning. All right. So if you could tell us a little bit more, Zach, just to get started, just what's your background and what led you to what you're doing now?
Yeah. So I had all started in the Army. I was in the Army as a special operations soldier. I was a Green Beret. And on those small teams, everyone has a particular job that they do. And my job was medicine. I was a medic, and we do really advanced trauma, and then 6 months of that, and then 6 more months. So a year total of follow-up care, like actual clinical sort of stuff, not just trauma. And so I did a year of training in medicine, in addition to the regular Green Beret school stuff, right? So I loved it. I fell in love with medicine. I love treating people and all that stuff. And then I got out of the military in 2012 after a short, iteration in the military. And so I got in 2012, and the natural thing for me to do was go back, finish college, because I never finished college before, and then finish that and go to medical school. So I got into medical school, not sure how, because they saw that I made good grades the second time, not the first time. And they said, well, okay, you did pretty well. So we know you're different now, instead of your terrible GPA you had before. So they gave me a shot, and I went to medical school. And I was going to become a doctor. I was going to heal people and help them like I had before. Well, I found out the real story in medical school, and my eyes were sort of open to some things. I, as a second year medical student, so medical school is 4 years after college, and then you do residency, which is in my case as a primary care doctor, 3 more years of actual. You get paid like 50 or 60 grand a year to practice medicine and. Like with supervision, right? For 3 years I did that. And that's what all like medical doctors, MDs and DOs that are board certified in a specialty do that. Okay, so in the United States. All right, so anyway, as a second year medical student, so I'm in there, I'm in my second year, and I started getting arthritis, and my joints are hurting, and I didn't know why. And I start off slowly, and then it just kept getting worse and worse. So I'm looking this stuff up, and I have all these resources available to me because I'm in medical school. So we have all the, you know how when you look on, well, I don't know how many people look for articles and studies, but if you look for studies, oftentimes there's a paywall and you can't access the actual article. But I had access to all that stuff because I was in an academic institution. So I had all the research available to me, and I had all these professors and doctors that I could talk to. I could just go to class and just like ask my rheumatology professor about this rheumatological question, right? So I had all this
disposal. That's awesome.
Yeah, my disposal. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm gonna figure out why do I have this? Well, I couldn't find the answers. I couldn't find them in the studies that I had available to me, or the medical literature that I had available to me, or the textbooks or anything. And I couldn't, and none of my professors knew what was going on. And I went up through two systems. I went through the VA, which, cause I was had been in the military, and I went up through the academic system as well. So I went to all these, you know, very respectable, academic physicians, and they had no idea what was going on with my wrists. Well, it spread to my knees, and it was worsened over a year and a half.
Wow.
So yeah. So third year medical school, right. It had been getting worse for months and months and months, maybe a year at that point. I don't remember exactly the time frame, but a long time, months and months. And it was just getting like obviously worse. My wrists were like not just hurting, but they were visibly inflamed.
Yeah.
And I had all these tests run.
That's fast.
You know, I had EMGs. It's very fast. And it's a weird time frame. So I'm old to get juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, and I'm young to get osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. So it's like a weird, like 35, 32, whatever is a really weird time to get arthritis.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got all these tests done. I got an electromyogram where they send shocks down your arm to make sure your nerves are working correctly. I had x-rays of my wrist. I had all this blood work done, and everything came up normal. Except I had a high ANA, which is a very non-specific test that I have some sort of autoimmune or inflammation going on, but lots of the population have that elevated in their bloodstream and they don't have any symptoms at all. So what's it really worth? So anyways, that was the only thing that was high. Everything else was completely normal. No one knew what was going on. So I'm looking into the research and looking into how this, like, you know, how this disease is going to play out, and it's looking pretty grim. Oh. So my fiance at the time, who now thankfully is my wife, was super scared, and we were both super scared. And so, I was like, I actually had a conversation with her, and I said, "Hey, you know, I think you should reconsider marrying me. Like, I don't know. Wow. Are you sure you want to get into this? Because this is going to get worse and worse. And all the research I'm looking at is telling me that like this is rapidly progressive, and within 5 or 10 years, like I might be in a wheelchair and not be able to move. I might be locked up, and I might be on, you know, methotrexate, these biologics, may not be able to have kids. Like, didn't sign up for this. Like, this is, you know, this is not good." And we're super scared. And so she said, "No, that's not why I'm marrying you. I love you, and we're going to get this together," which is awesome. But I was also like, that's not a good decision. You know, like, I mean, I love you too. I don't want you, you know, let's just, anyway. So anyway, she stayed engaged to me. And anyway, we're in a bookstore, like a couple weeks later, and you know, we split ways to go look at different sections or whatever, and I come back and find her, and she's in the cooking section. I'm saying, "Hey, what are you looking at?" And she said, "Well, she had this autoimmune disease, like autoimmune diet cookbook." Oh, and cool. I'm like, "Okay, what is this?" And so she said, "Well, if you're gonna have this disease," and we hadn't talked about it in a couple weeks, so that's how much it's on her mind. Like, we still haven't talked about it in 2 weeks, but she's thinking about it. So it's like, gosh. So she's holding this book, and she said, "Well, if you're going to have this disease, I'm going to do whatever I can for you. And if that is cooking, if I'm cooking, I want to cook the best I can for you."
Wow.
And I was like, "Well, that's awesome. Super sweet. And I love you. And this is crazy that someone actually loves me. And like, this is insane." Like, I felt like this wave of emotions was like insane, but
that's a great thing to be.
I was like,
great person to be paired with.
Yeah. I mean, she's amazing. So anyways, but I was also at the same time, and I didn't say this, of course, but I was also skeptical because I had just been worked up for the last few months and months, maybe a year, by all the experts in all this stuff. I'm in medical school. I've looked into the research, can't find any answers. No one knows what's going on. I doubt eating celery is going to fix my wrists. You know what I mean? That's the kind of attitude I had.
Right. Because celery feels like the least nutrient dense.
Yeah, well, that's a bad example. It's not the celery, but that's the kind of idea. I didn't even open the book yet. I'm just like, you know, so I'm like, "This, you're super sweet and awesome. I'm just also not," and I didn't say this part, but I'm in mind, I'm like, "This is, you know, okay, but probably I wasn't excited about the fact that my arthritis was all of a sudden going to be cured. Right?
Yeah,
so I was just like,
yeah.
Okay, well, let's see what this is. So I open the book, I start reading, and the more I start reading, the more I realize like there might actually be something to this. So then I looked at the resources, and there's a lot of like, there's a lot of citations, and there's the in the back of the book there are studies that are cited, and I'm like, huh. So I looked at stuff up in the, and we're in the bookstore. So I go back home and I Google, of course, right? I don't buy the book. Like didn't support the bookstore. Right. But anyway, I go home and Google, I'm afraid to say, or I'm sorry to say. Anyway, so I go home and Google all this stuff, and I'm like, holy cow, there's something to this.
Yeah.
So I found this guy named Alessio Fasano, who is a pediatric gastroenterologist, and he studies intestinal permeability. And he's discovered this molecule called zonulin that, you know, increases the stuff that can get through your intestines. And there's this idea that maybe that leads to autoimmune disease and leads to inflammation. And I'm like, why did I not learn about any of this stuff in medical school? So then I go back to medical school, I ask my gastroenterology professors, and they have no idea about any of it. I start looking at the microbiome, so I went to a functional medicine, like, so anyways, I'm jumping ahead in the story, but I started looking up all this stuff and I realized there's something to it. And I didn't learn about it. And I'm sort of frustrated with that. But then also I started taking this to heart. I started doing this stuff and you know, I'm learning and I'm reading all this stuff at the same time. Right. So a few weeks go by and I basically start changing my diet, realize what I'm doing, realize that there actually is something to this, start taking some supplements, and my arthritis that I had for a year, almost a year and a half, went away within weeks.
Wow.
Completely resolved within weeks.
That's amazing.
So then I'm pissed. Well, I'm like, you know, I'm like super excited and relieved, but pissed because I am in medical school as a third year medical student.
Yes.
And nobody has asked me about my diet once out of all the doctors I talked to.
Yep.
And if I talk to them and I talk to them about the word leaky gut, and this is 6 or 7 years ago, so this is a buzzword now, but like, it was just now. I mean, if I talk to them about that microbiome, and they're just like, oh, roll their eyes, quackery. Right. And I'm like, dude, I freaking had like what I cured myself and nobody knew what was going on. What is happening? And so, you know, so there was this real frustration with some of the, now I'm not, we'll get into the doctors and why the system is the way it is in a minute, but I'm not talking about doctors, but some doctors are very academic, evidence-based medicine. If there's not a large double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial to prove that something works, which by the way, are usually funded by pharmaceutical companies. We'll get into that too. then they're not going to do it because doctors are very risk averse, which is appropriate. Doctors don't want to do anything or do harm to people. And so they only want to recommend things that they know that there's a lot of good data and studies to show, which is appropriate in certain, but you're leaving all the other stuff and people are suffering because we're not willing to step outside of a box, right? Yeah. Because there's not enough data, but there is data. It's just, anyway, so this whole, So that's how I got into it. Right. And so then after I cured myself, I got pissed. Then I'm like, okay, well, let me go find these functional integrative medicine doctors. Luckily there was a guy in Birmingham who's retired now, Birmingham, Alabama, named James McMinn, Jim McMinn. So I'll give a shout out to him because he let me come to his clinic and taught me what's up and opened my eyes. And he had people come into his clinic and he would say, hey, would you mind telling Zach your story? Because I would just shadow him. I was just listening. And he was like, and people one after the other were like, I went to this doctor and that doctor, this doctor, that doctor. And when I found Dr. McMinn, it saved my life.
Wow.
And they would cry. They would bawl their eyes out in the clinic room telling me their story. And not one, all of them, like over and over and over. And until until he did it 6 or 7 times. And I'm like, I get it. You know, like, and so then I'm like, wow, this is what I'm doing with my life, obviously.
Yep.
So then I got into functional integrated medicine. And then I went to residency. I finished, you know, I wanted to do primary care because I wanted to learn the whole spectrum of everything.
Yeah.
So I wanted to learn how to deliver babies and children and old folks and ICU and, you know, geriatrics. I'm trying to think of the word. I'm trying to think of old folks. and I feel like an old folks now because I couldn't think of a word. So anyways, end of life care and dealing with death and dealing with all that stuff. I wanted to learn the depth and the depth of medicine and all that stuff. And so I did family medicine because you can do that in that specialty. And so in residency, while I'm learning all that stuff, I also got certified in functional medicine through the Institute for Functional Medicine, which is the by far most legitimate functional medicine school. It's the one that everyone thinks, it's the reason that it's called functional medicine. Dr. Jeffrey Bland started it, and he wrote the book Disease Illusion, which sort of changed the way that people think. Wow, a long time ago. And so anyway, so what's that?
You said disease illusion?
Disease delusion.
Oh, delusion. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's a very interesting book, interesting read. So anyway, Institute of Functional Medicine. So I studied there. And then, so I was able to be in this very unique position where I was a resident I was a conventional medicine resident as a certified functional medicine doctor, trying to mesh these two worlds together while I'm treating people. So I was able to practice both of those things while I was in residency. And it was awesome. It was really great. And it was frustrating, and it was everything. So I've got this really unique perspective into both sort of worlds because I did that. And then I graduated and started my practice. So that's sort of my whole story and why I got into it.
That's amazing. And you mentioned stepping out of a box, you know, and what's crazy to me is that, like, going back to the basics of what are you eating is not, to me, stepping out of a box. You know, it's like, that's the most basic, like, that is Occam's razor, whatever, like it's right in front of you. That's probably the answer, you know? And like the biggest change over the last, you know, 50 years in our, as far as our like physical health and things like that, has been all of the chemicals and things and that have been added to our food, you know, and it's like, that to me is the most obvious thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is from, yeah, it does seem like it would be obvious, but from a very evidence-based physician's perspective, there's not data. There's not good data at all to show an obvious link between what you eat and then leaky gut and then inflammation and then causing autoimmune disease. Okay. And so they can ask you what you eat, there's nothing for them to, doctors learn a certain way, and they learn how to treat diseases with the tools that they have, which is, and the tools that they have available to them, which is they're not able to spend enough time with you to talk about your diet and then try to work on, like, let's do an elimination diet and let's try this thing or that thing. They have to do whatever insurance companies are going to pay for, and insurance companies pay for things that have those studies to show that this leads to that. Also, not every doctor is convinced that there is a link, or they're not convinced what the link is. So there's a lot of gray in that. So why can some people eat this and some people not? And if there's no test to show or demonstrate that there is leaky gut happening, right? Well, then how do we know that's even what's going on? It's hard for them to have a 15 or 20 minute conversation with you, talk about all the things you have and your drugs that you're on and, you know, this and that, and then talk about your complaints. And then to sit there and say, well, let me counsel you on what I think might be going on, but it might not be going on. And we don't know a lot about it, but it certainly works for some people, but it doesn't work for other people. It's just like, that's not how they're trained. That's not what they know how to do. That's not what they're able to do in their practice. So this is sort of getting into that whole thing I know you wanted to talk about later, but it seems obvious that your diet is important and you shouldn't eat crap, right? But it's way more complicated than that, obviously. And what is crap, and what should we be eating, and what should I be eating for my particular situation, and what about if I feel like this? It's so complicated. Diet is really hard to study because everyone's different. So how are you going to have a control group, right? So it's really complicated, even though some things seem obvious, but from a doctor's perspective, and when people come in with complaints of, I don't feel good, or I've got this weird thing and there's no test for it. Like, you know, it's really hard for a doctor's to deal with that.
you were saying the other day that like they're pretty much limited to like certain codes they're allowed to put in. And I have heard a little bit, I don't know how true it is, if you want to clarify on this, but I have heard about, you know, physicians and clinics contracting with certain pharmaceutical companies and basically being paid to like push certain drugs and things like that. And I'm sure that there's some constraints caused by all that. Can you get into that a little bit?
The way this works is patients come in and they have insurance.
Yeah.
That might be Medicaid, but that might be whatever other company. I can say Medicaid because it's a government agency, but whatever other insurance company. Whatever that and the patient is wants the insurance to pay for that for what's happening, right? So when a doctor is on an insurance panel, meaning the insurance says, okay, you're one of the doctors that will cover stuff for, doctors have to play by those insurance company rules. And the insurance company rules are you need to ask this patient questions. And then based on whatever they say, whatever the complaints are, there's a code for that. And you put the code in, and then whatever code you have, that's depending on whatever code that is, that's what I can do. So let's say someone comes in with a complaint of fatigue. Well, I can put in whatever number, fatigue. I don't have it memorized, of course, but there's a number for it. And they'll end up with stuff. Yeah. Well, believe it or not, I used to have a couple of them memorized. Anyway, so and a lot of doctors have lots of them memorized. So anyways, fatigue, that means I can order a CBC, which is a complete blood count, which is a blood test.
Okay.
To check your red blood cells, to check your hemoglobin. All that means is I put this code in for fatigue because the patient said it. I can write a note saying, and the notes are written a certain way. So patient said this, and then the notes are the patient's notes. They're owned by the patient, right? You may not have access until you ask the people, but they're legally your notes. And some people have patient portals where you can go in and see the notes anyways. But the doctor writes, the patient complains of fatigue or however they write it. Because you said that, you can put that as a code, fatigue, and then the patient can see it. So you can't just make stuff up, right?
Right.
And so you say fatigue, they say fatigue, you write fatigue. Because you've coded fatigue, now you can do certain things because you've unlocked that diagnosis code, right? Gotcha. Or someone can come in and they are weighed and they have a BMI of a certain amount. And so then they're classified as overweight. And so that overweight, if I code that, it unlocks other stuff that I can do. Okay. So you need these keys, these diagnosis keys to unlock things you can do, right? Some things that I want. And so it's like a video. It's like a game, except you're playing with people's lives. But other than that, it is a game. Yeah. The insurance companies it is a game to them. It's money to them. It is a game.
That literally just made me choke on my beer.
Yeah. So, but you're right though. It is a game where you're like, let me talk to this person, try to redirect them in the 15 minutes I have to figure out what diagnosis codes I can do to try to do as much as I possibly can for them. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and also talking about all the complaints and looking at their medical history and readjusting all their medications and dosages and making sure you followed up on labs you did before and then whatever labs they need now and making sure you're doing all the stuff within evidence-based medicine and all the stuff that you're to be appropriate, all this within 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And so you're doing all this stuff. So you're trying to unlock with diagnosis codes stuff you can do for them because you can't order stuff. And then patients will come in and they'll say, well, I want to check all my nutrients, or I want to this or that. It's like, well, I can't do that. Or it's not appropriate. Sometimes it's just not appropriate. Like it doesn't make sense there are algorithms that are like, they're evidence-based algorithms where it's like, well, if you have this, then you have that. If you have this, you may have this or whatever. And, yeah, and patients are like, well, I want this. And it's like, you don't have this up here. So it's impossible to have that.
Yeah.
Well, why? Because I'm a doctor and I learned all this stuff and it's really long to explain. You just have to, this is what I do all day, you know, like, trust me. Okay.
This is why you're paying me insurance is paying me.
Well, yeah. Right. And so, anyways, this is the frustration that doctors have. And by the way, you have to see 20 or 24 people a day and do that, right? Because the margins are so thin to keep a clinic open that you have to see that many people a day for the insurance company's reimbursement to keep your clinic open. Literally, my residency clinic lost money. They lost money. They just were able to do that because they got a subsidy from the government because they're a residency and they were associated with the bigger hospital system.
Okay.
But the clinic itself lost money.
So doctors aren't as wealthy as we tend to think they are then.
Oh, well, this was residency.
Okay.
And some doctors are doing very well, but primary care doctors and most, yes, that is very true. Most people would not believe how little doctors make. Yeah. I'm in a group on Facebook with 60 something thousand MDs and DOs.
Yeah.
Only MDs and DOs are allowed in this group. And so there's all kinds of conversation around all this inside stuff. So I have a very good, I know exactly what doctors think and all these problems that we're putting. This conversation is very active and alive.
Yeah.
So I'm not just making this up from 6 years ago. This is like, I know exactly what doctors think. Okay. Yeah. In mass. Right. And so I know how much doctors make. They'll be like, hey, what do you think about this job? I'm getting this much money or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, gosh, dude, I could make more money than that. I mean, there was one the other day that's like, I'm a pediatric oncologist and I make 110,000 here. And I'm thinking about going to somewhere else. And I'm like, dude, you went to you went to 4 years of medical school, 3 years of residency for pediatrics, I don't even know the order of that. They either do oncology first or pediatrics first. Maybe they do oncology first. So they did internal medicine, then oncology, then pediatrics. I don't even know how you do that, but they're a pediatric cancer doctor and they make $110,000 a year, which some people are like, well, that's more than I make. Dude, $110,000 a year, you can go be a salesman and make that easy out of like 22 years old, 20 years old. And so doctors make way less than people think, way less, especially primary care, especially pediatricians. I mean, people would not believe how little doctors make, and they're trying to, and they're having this life where, and they've gone through all this school and this is not from somebody who's, I'm not in the system. This is just objective data. Like, yes, it is very fair to say doctors make way less than people think. And they work way harder than people think. And their hands are way more tied than people think, you know. Now I have some complaints to make about stuff, but it is not against.
Can you tell us what some of the complaints are?
It is not against doctors. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the biggest one is the insurance companies.
Okay.
Insurance companies are just companies. They're companies that make money.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is, and this is, you can go really deep on this. I'm not going to go political. Some people think we should have a, socialized healthcare. Some people think, hey, you know, have you ever been to the UK? For instance, I'm in the UK now. Like, it's really hard to get care. You have a wait list. Have you seen how hard it is for doctors to code Medicare and Medicaid stuff? And the conversation is not dissimilar among physicians. Some physicians think we should have socialized healthcare. Some physicians think that's a ridiculous idea. So I don't want to get into that much. I just want to say that in fairness, some people think one way and some people think the other way, but the way that we have it where it's right in the middle is the worst of both worlds, because we're not able to have the benefits of socialized medicine, but we're also not able to have the benefits of capitalism, in which some people say, well, it is such a capitalist system, but yes, there's capitalist stuff. Yes. But the government has such a big role. And when we allow, it's not a free market, because we've got our hands in so much regulation and all this stuff and so much corruption that the free market's not allowed to thrive and drive prices down, which is what the free market does. Okay. So I don't want to have a capitalism socialism debate, but my point is we're right in the middle of those two things, and which is worse than we need to. It's worth in both. We need either a free market or socialized medicine. And either one of those would be better than the worst of both worlds, which is what we have right now.
Gotcha.
So another big problem is that insurance companies should not have their paws in primary care. So you shouldn't go to the primary care doctor using your insurance. That's not what insurance is for. Okay. I think we can have a social safety net of Medicaid or whatever. I'm not arguing against that either.
Yeah.
But going to the primary care doctor, with using your and letting your insurance company dictate what gets done is the same thing as saying, I need new tires on my car and calling your auto insurance company, or I need gas for my car and calling your auto insurance company and saying, hey, and they say, well, you can only get this type of gas if you meet these criteria, and you can only get these kind of tires, and actually you only get three tires, and you just have to sort of try to make it work. And you have to jump through all these hoops to try to get those tires anyway.
Okay.
And so it's like, well, I'll just buy them myself because that doesn't make any sense, because that's not what insurance is for. Insurance is for catastrophic events.
Yeah.
So that whenever, so the fact that insurance companies play such a big role in primary care is one of the biggest problems, right? So what can people do individually about all these things? I mean, but those are the biggest problems, right?
Yeah. So it's almost better for people then to go and pay the $50 consultation fee without insurance, so they can get the full gamut of opportunity for like changing whatever they need to change, is what you're saying.
It would be better. There's this movement. I don't know if it's a movement anymore, but there are direct primary care doctors who do primary care for cash. And I know them personally, and you would be so surprised how cheap stuff is if you don't use insurance.
Yeah.
Like, you can pay them monthly, or you can pay, like, let's say you paid $200 to see them for, let's say you paid, because first of all, people would be surprised how much a 15-minute doctor visit gets billed to insurance. It's like $200-$300.
Yeah.
For a 15-minute doctor visit, the insurance company pays that. And they're paying that because you're paying enough premium for them to be able to afford that, right?
Right.
And so anyways, say you pay this direct primary care doctor, $250 to go see him for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever, because direct primary care doctors are able to see people for a lot longer. Let's say you pay him that. The screenings and the drugs are like pennies. It depends on what state in the US, but you can dispense the drugs from your clinic, and they're like so cheap.
Yeah.
Everything is so, in an EKG, they have an EKG machine. EKGs are free, right? Because primary care doctors can read EKGs. You don't necessarily need to send it to a cardiologist and have an expert consult. You can, you might need an echocardiogram and need to go to the hospital and get an echo or an ultrasound of your heart, and then have a real cardiologist read that, which no one can read those except cardiologists, right? Well, that was a pretty strong statement, but the medical doctors that read echoes are cardiologists. Okay. They're heart doctors, and they're good at it, and they practice it in residency. And so I'm not far off when I say that. There may be some other people that can read them, but in general, anyway, so the point is you might need that, and you might need insurance for that, because that's sort of a catastrophic thing. That's really expensive, but you'd be surprised how much if you go to an imaging center and you pay for an x-ray out of pocket, it's like $25, and primary care doctors can read x-rays a lot of times, but even if you get a radiologist to read it, you have to pay the radiologist. It's super cheap because radiologists are just flicking through stuff so fast. They do this all day long. Boom, 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 boom. They're so good. They look at so many images. And so for them to see a chest x-ray, right? Yeah. Taking an x-ray costs the imaging center $0. It's like, it's a digital photograph, right? It costs them nothing. Then they automatically send it to a radiologist. The radiologist reads it in 2 seconds. Boom. Yeah. Blah, 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 went through my thing. It's normal. Type my thing up or hit my little dot phrase, and it just auto populates. Send. Done. Takes 2 seconds. Right. $25.
Okay.
You can get MRIs for a couple hundred dollars. You can get DEXA scans for a couple hundred dollars. All this stuff that insurance companies charge thousands and thousands of dollars for is so cheap out of pocket.
Yeah.
So cheap. This is all possible, and people do this, and it's called direct primary care. You can find one in your area, right? So, and they're great, and I love that idea.
Yeah.
And so that's a thing you can do, and then carry insurance for catastrophic events. That's how it should work. And then if you can't afford direct primary care, you make a certain income level, we can still have Medicaid. You can still have a social safety net of some type.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to get into the nuances of all that because I'm not an expert on that. But my point is, you can still have that sort of thing. Yeah. And have the system work way better, right, than trying to let insurance companies dictate primary care. It doesn't make any sense. And this is sort of a huge problem in the system. Yes.
Yeah. Oh man, that's amazing. I'm really glad you said that, because it's like, it's I don't know. It's kind of like, I don't know, what are you getting? Like, I don't know. I can't even think of an example, but it's like, I feel like, you know, we have a lot of that. Just in, even in, and not, again, not to get political, but just overall with government getting involved in things that the government doesn't know anything about, you know? And it's like,
yeah, no comment. Yeah. No comment. I mean, I mean, it's,
yeah, different. I mean, yeah,
it's so complex. Yeah,
for sure. And it's like, it's like, leave it to the professionals. you know, pay it out, pay out what you need to pay out and let them do their job. So, yeah. Cool, man. So what are some other, do you have any other like large complaints about the medical industry? I know you talked a little bit about pharmaceutical stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I could complain, but I think the crux of your question is, I think like, yeah, I mean, pharmaceutical drugs are way too expensive, but it also funds the research that's required to develop the drugs. I mean, the United States develops the drugs that everyone uses in the world, right? Pretty much. And so, yeah, there's some screwed up stuff in our system, but there's some really good stuff that comes from it. And drugs are one of those good things. So I think what I'd like to say, what this sort of segues to is, what do people need to do? What can we do? Or what sort of attitude should we have about all this stuff? So I think the thing that I see people do is they don't know what to do. Like, if the doctors are like this, then what do I do? So what I want people to understand is, I guess, the role of a physician in their care. Physicians, and by physician I mean sort of everyone calls themselves doctor these days, doctor this, doctor that, doctor whatever, right? But what I'm talking about is a board certified primary care physician. So in the US it's an MD or a DO, and those degrees are basically equivalent. Okay, they go through the same residencies, they can both go to medical school. Just for people that are like, what's an MD or what's a DO? DOs are just a different type of medical school, but it's the same thing. They take the same board exams often. They take the same medical school exam sometimes. They take the same they go to the same residencies, they take the same board exams, and they're equivalent. Okay. So MDs and DOs are the same. So I'm just gonna say MD from now on because that's what I am and it's easy and everyone gets it. But DOs are, it includes DOs, okay, just for the record. So what is the role of an MD DO? They work within the insurance system. They are amazing at diagnosis of disease. So that's what they do. And that's why they're good at that. And why, and because that's what insurance companies pay for, which is a catastrophic event really in your health. Okay. They pay for you to, if you have a disease, you have a complaint, insurance companies are going to pay for doctors to look for diseases with lab work or their exams or whatever. And if you have that disease, they're going to pay for you to treat that disease. Just like if you've been in a car accident, your vehicle insurance will pay for that to be repaired. That's what they do. That's what doctors do. They are not good at nutrition counseling or making you feel better or helping you live longer, other than reducing the amount of damage that your chronic diseases that they've discovered are causing. Okay. They're not good at anything besides finding diseases and treating them with drugs, because that's the catastrophic event that's happened in your health.
Yeah.
There is no one better by any stretch of the imagination, not even close. These doctors are amazing humans. They are very, very intelligent. They are very caring. They love their patients. They're so stressed out. They're basically martyrs to work for $100,000 a year and work 60 hours a week, go through all that stuff and all this stuff, and try to see 20 to 24 people a day because they love people and they're doing the best they can. So to hear people talk, especially with the way that I sometimes come across on social media, when I talk bad about the system and what you need to do and take control of your health and stuff, people say, yeah, doctors don't know this. And it's like, gosh, that's so, that if you only knew the amazing human beings behind that are primary care doctors and the constraints they had and the frustrations that they also have with the way that they're treating you, you would have a completely different mindset.
Into the Dark Blue has partnered with our favorite CBD shop, Alamo Botanicals, to give you guys easy access to your favorite CBD products. My personal favorite is the water-soluble CBD that you can drop in your water in the morning and head out the door. It'll help you with your focus and anxiety throughout the day and simply just help you get your job done a little bit easier. I also really enjoy the Moringa skin food. It's great to get rid of some of those blemishes and red spots on the skin and just really give you a nice, healthy glow. So head over to alamobotanicals.com, save yourself 10% with promo code DARKBLUE, all caps DARKBLUE. A portion of that also goes to help us with our mission to create men's groups all around the country at independent breweries. So help us make that happen and help yourself be a little healthier as well. Head over to alamobotanicals.com.
I want to make the point that primary care doctors and lots of other types too. I'm just a primary care doctor. And I know the most of those.
Yeah.
Are amazing humans, and their role in the system that they work within is to find diseases that you haven't treated with drugs. Okay. But I hear people say, well, I don't want to go to I'm not going to the doctor. Doctors, all they're going to do is try to give me drugs. It's like, but how do you know you don't have it? That's like saying, if I'm on fire, don't spray me with a fire extinguisher because it's got chemicals in it. Right. That's the same
logic.
That's stupid. Right. To be honest with you, to be frank, nice.
To be blunt,
like,
yes.
Let's spray you with some chemicals. Let's get the fire out. And then let's talk about why you got on fire. Right. Yeah. But don't run around the yard on fire because you don't want to get sprayed with chemicals. Right. Go to the doctor, let them tell you if you're on fire or not.
Yeah.
And then if they need to spray you with chemicals, get sprayed with the chemicals, and then we'll take a shower later. It's not that big of a deal, right? The chemicals aren't going to do any more damage. Like, they're doing way less damage than the fire is doing. People walk around with blood sugars that are two in the 200s, and they are like, their cholesterol is like 1,000. Like, I don't take statins because I heard on the internet that statins can kill you. It's like, dude, your cholesterol is your blood is thick. You're going to have a stroke.
Yeah.
So go to the doctor, okay? And go to the doctor, get the lab work that insurance companies are going to pay for. You know how important, like, lab work is so important. And it's so, you can glean so much good information from lab work. If you go to the doctor and tell them, hey, I'm overweight and I've got fatigue, they'll get a CBC, they'll get a CMP, a whole complete metabolic panel that shows your blood sugar, your kidneys, your liver, all this stuff. They'll get your blood cells, they'll get a lipid panel to show your cholesterol, your triglycerides, your HDL, LDL. And you know how much information I could talk to you about with just that? So much. Like, hours I could talk to you about. Because I've given lectures on these things to each other. We give lectures to each other in a residency. There's so much good information there. And you've got an expert at disease diagnosis who is going to help you understand what's going on with your body. Like, why would you not go to the doctor? If they tell you to take a drug, it's because you are on fire. Like, doctors don't give drugs for stuff that is not indicated. Right. Yeah. They don't just give drugs out. So anyway, I hope I'm trying to sell people on going to the primary care doctor. Go to your doctor. It's super important. They're really smart and they're really good and they really love you. Okay.
Yeah.
If you get frustrated that you're seeing them for 15 minutes because they're stressed out and they're maybe burned out, just understand that their job is really terrible. Right.
For sure.
Imagine a job that you hated, but you had to care because you love people. And no matter what you did determined someone's life, their livelihood, the way that they could treat their family. So you have to care at 100%, but you're also burned out at 100%.
Yeah.
So you can't stop. That's the most stressful thing ever. You
terrible paradox for sure.
You can't. It's like a baby. It's like a baby's hanging out a window and you're holding the baby up, but your muscles are like shaking, but you can't let go. But your muscles are like, but you also can't hold this baby up anymore. Like, what are you going to do? That's how doctors are, okay? Primary care doctors that have been doing this forever. They can't not care. They can't let the baby go, but they also cannot do this anymore, right? Yeah.
So what you're saying system, is so, it's important for us to give people the benefit of the doubt and
give your doctors the benefit of the doubt. And even if you're just doing it for selfish purposes, you should still go because it's logical to go to the doctor.
Especially if you do have insurance.
Especially if you, this is what I'm talking about, people that have insurance. And if you don't have insurance, then you probably qualify for Medicaid, right? Yeah. So go to the doctor if you have insurance. And if you don't, but realize that they work within a certain system and that system has bounds.
Okay.
And the bounds are based on what you say, they have certain keys and those keys unlock certain things. And that doesn't mean they can do what they can't order a reverse T3 on you. Because that's not what insurance companies pay for, and it's not indicated based on the research. Okay.
So let's talk a little bit then about what you do, because I feel like, you know, that's really important. You know, get the diagnosis, find out where you're at, and then that's when you can decide when you need to go see somebody like Zach. So what do you do with Framework Wellness, and what's the purpose behind it?
So what we do in medicine is we, because of the way that works and what I've just explained, everything is treated in a silo. It's treated in a certain, like if you've got high blood pressure, then that's the blood pressure key silo, right? So we do the blood pressure treatment. And if you have liver disease, then we also have, that's a silo. And so we get these sort of labs. And then if you have, I don't know, high blood sugar on your blood test, well, then that's the diabetes, you know, pre-diabetes silo. In reality, all of those things could be due to the same underlying problem, which is insulin resistance, which causes what's called metabolic rigidity. Well, I call it metabolic rigidity. There's a term called metabolic flexibility, which is not also very common, but that's like my thing. So I use metabolic flexibility, and then I say metabolic rigidity, where you're not metabolically flexible and you can't really use your fuel types efficiently, which are the two fuel types are glucose and ketones, or burning sugar and burning fat. Gotcha. Anyway, beside the point. So the point is, those three things, while a doctor's going to say, okay, you have this diagnosis code, high blood pressure, you have this diagnosis code, prediabetes, you have this diagnosis code, elevated LFTs or elevated liver enzymes or, you know, whatever. So you put those in and that unlocks certain things they're going to do. In reality, so based on those things they're going to do, if something's high, then they're going to give you blood pressure medication. They're going to give you maybe metformin and talk about it, tell you to eat better and exercise. Then they're going to give you whatever your liver stuff shows. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it says fatty liver and they're like, well, we'll just watch it. Maybe they get an ultrasound of your liver, right? But these are all separated from each other. And they treat those things with drugs because they're putting the fires out as best they can with the tools they have. And then they send you on the way and they say, eat better.
Yeah.
But people come from that and they're like, well, why do I have all this stuff, right? And those are just examples of three things. People come in with 20 things. They're like, I don't feel good. My weight is going up and I can't get it down. My energy levels are terrible. I can't sleep very well. I'm stressed out. My gut health is not great. And my mindset's, I have brain fog and I have fatigue together. And my menstrual periods are off. And, you know, really, I don't have any testosterone. I don't have any libido. I don't want to have, you know, if you're a guy, like, I don't, my wife is beautiful. I don't care. And that feels weird. Yeah. I want to care. Yeah, yeah. She's, you know, she's awesome. So it's like, I have all this stuff. What's going on? I don't want to take 20 pills, right? So that's the type of person that's like, okay, well, what do I do then? Okay. Yeah. Well, then you've got to get and realize that, okay, my body is all, everything works together. It's not in silos.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, you're on fire a little bit in a lot of different areas, but why am I on fire? Right. So people are like, well, I want to figure this out. I want to feel good. I want to feel awesome. I want to like fix these little problems. And I can't really get to the root cause just by taking a blood test and then getting a drug. Right.
Yeah.
And so those type of people are the people that go to see people like me that are like, okay, I'm going to pay out of pocket because that's what you have to do. And I'm going to see you and use your expertise. Just like if you were going to see a lawyer to do a contract, you're going to pay out of pocket. Just like if you're going to see any other expert consultant.
Yeah.
To figure out what's going on with you, you're going to pay out of pocket unless you want to pay for insurance, unless you want to use insurance companies. Right. Mm-hmm. And so another thing is people will contact me and say, hey, do you take TRICARE? Right. And I use TRICARE again because it's a government. It's a military thing. So do you take TRICARE? It's like, that's what do you mean? That doesn't make any sense to ask it that way. Do I take TRICARE? TRICARE doesn't pay for what I do. TRICARE pays for a very specific thing. And that's what your primary care doctor does. That's what TRICARE pays for. That's why they do it. TRICARE doesn't pay for anything else. So it's not a matter of, do I take TRICARE? It's like, I'm out here like trying to this, but, oh, I just don't want to take TRICARE because I don't know. Like, I would love to take insurance. I would love for insurance to pay for this. Right.
Yeah.
And so, no. So you have to pay out of pocket for this because otherwise I have to play by insurance company rules and use the keys to unlock whatever they say.
Yeah.
So
you all
of it's a, it doesn't make sense to ask that question. Right. So anyway, see me, they pay cash and they say, well, and I'm able to spend as much time as I need to talk to them, understand their situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we develop steps based on whatever they have. Usually the two things that usually people have are metabolic disease and some sort of autoimmune, immune inflammation, leaky gut, diarrhea stuff going on. All of those things are together. So I call it the immunity pathway. And then I've got a metabolic pathway. And those are the two main pathways that I usually take people down when they work with me. Most people have the metabolic pathway. So just to put this in context, 45% of Americans have either prediabetes or diabetes.
Wow, 45%.
Almost half of Americans have diagnosable prediabetes or a type 2 diabetes.
Wow.
Almost half.
That's a lot.
Way more than that have insulin resistance. I'm going to say it's upwards of 85-90%. I don't have data on that. That's my estimation. But I could easily say at least 3/4 of Americans have insulin resistance.
Yeah. I actually listened to a really great podcast episode recently about glucose and how big of a part it plays in our bodies. And
oh man, it's crazy. It's huge. I heard someone say, and I haven't looked this up, but she was a legit doctor and she was on Lewis Howes podcast. And she said 9 out of 10 of the diseases that kill people in the US are worsened by or caused by glucose metabolism issues, right? And I think that's true. That's probably true. Yeah. Because the one that's not is probably like accidental trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a huge issue. So the metabolic thing is huge, and almost everyone needs this. And so that, but if you cure metabolic disease, you feel better all the time right now. And if you become metabolically flexible and work with me, and I teach you how to, because I work with everybody who's like from high-powered C-suite people to moms who are trying to take care of 3 kids. I don't know who's busier. It's probably a toss-up, but like these people are busy, right? But I work from everywhere from like people that want to maximize their performance,
mm-hmm.
and people who just want to feel better and have energy, right?
Yeah.
And the way to do that is become metabolically flexible, where you can not only use sugar for fuel, but you can also use ketones for fuel and feel good doing it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a normal thing. We can get into that later if we have time. But we work on metabolic flexibility. And when you do that, when you get to the point where your glucose metabolism is optimized, you feel better all the time. You think clearly, you know how to go into ketosis well and go back out of it. And you can swap back and forth at will. And all that short term, but long term, listen to this. You will never be able to develop prediabetes, much less type 2 diabetes. So that would cure 45% of the population in the United States. Okay. Just that alone,
mm-hmm.
which is, by the way, anyway, I get so passionate about this.
I love it.
Half the population, not to mention that even if we use my very conservative estimate of 75% of the US who has chronic insulin resistance, they still feel like garbage, because if you have insulin resistance, that means insulin's high in your bloodstream all the time, which is a storage hormone, which makes you feel lethargic and makes you gain weight and not be able to lose weight. Literally, this hormone is telling your liver, do not burn fat. We have plenty of energy. It's an anabolic storage hormone.
You know what baffles me is that so many people are so familiar with feeling gross that they don't realize they feel gross. Like they're just...
That's 100% true. They're like a frog in a pot. Like it's just getting worse and worse and worse, and they don't even know that they feel so bad. And then that's what happens. So people work with me. I teach them how to do this. Sorry. So my point is with those 9 things. So like you won't get prediabetes or type 2 diabetes. It's the lead. You won't get fatty liver disease. You can't get fatty liver disease. It's not possible. You can have high cholesterol if it's genetic, but most of high cholesterol is due to this. So you don't get high cholesterol. So you don't get cardiovascular disease. So it cures all that, pretty much all that. Which is the leading cause of high blood pressure, by the way. Not all of it, but most of it.
Okay.
So it cures most high blood pressure. It cures, I don't know if most, because we don't have the data, but it cures a lot of dementia, right? It will reverse the process that leads to much dementia. I don't know how much, but a lot of it. And it significantly reduces your risk of all cancers, because you target senescent cells and try to clean out your system.
Yeah.
So all those things can be completely... well, mostly reversed and prevented by what I do to make people feel good short term, to make them feel awesome short term.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's amazing that we don't know that stuff. So anyway,
teaching people how to eat, exercise, like what's the kind of like basic framework for what you teach people how to do?
If I could get everyone to understand one concept, it would be the concept of fasting.
Okay.
So when I say the word fasting, immediately people have a knee-jerk reflex that makes them think of hunger.
Uh-huh.
Right. So I say fasting, people think hunger. And that is not correct. Right.
Okay.
That is maybe your experience when you didn't eat some food one time and you felt hungry. But they think of fasting as, well, that's going to suck. I'm going to feel hungry. I'm going to be hangry. I'm going to be lightheaded. I'm going to be have a headache. I'm going to I'm going to kick the dog. I'm going to do whatever else, right? I'm going to feel, I'm not going to be able to think well or work, perform at work. And what, and this is the crucial concept I want everyone to pay attention to. Once you learn how to fast, all right, let me start over. You have two types of fuel that you can use, which I alluded to earlier. You have glucose and ketones. Both of those things are in your blood sugar, in your bloodstream all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Glucose is blood sugar. Same thing. Glucose is a sugar. So blood sugar and ketones are a breakdown product of fat. So basically we can say sugar and fat. And by that, I mean blood sugar and blood ketones. You can use sugar for fuel, which you eat with carbohydrates and it breaks down into sugar and use that for fuel. Or you can use ketones for fuel, which you have to run out of sugar to do.
Okay.
And your body will start using ketones. You have a low level of both of those in your bloodstream at all times. You have a low level of ketones in your bloodstream at all times, and you have a certain level of blood sugar that your body wants to maintain. It keeps it very, very particular amount based on lots of different things I won't go into. But you have these two types of sugar, of fuel. Your body will preferentially use glucose, sugar, carbohydrates. If you have any available carbohydrates and sugar, your body is going to use that first and store that as efficiently as possible because that's available food.
Mm-hmm.
How much time do we have left? Okay, so let me go into this.
Yeah, about 10, let's go about 10 minutes.
Okay, so I won't go into the whole thing, but in the 1920s, refrigeration and preservatives both became widely available, and the food industry started learning how to process foods better with all the technology, and all that led to us needing, having food available to us at all times.
Yeah.
So we have never in our history before then where we just like had food available at our house all the time to just grab the fridge, right? Uh-huh. That didn't exist.
People were like, I'm going to grab a snack real quick.
Yeah, let me go grab a snack. You literally have food stocked in your house at all times. That was never a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So now that people have that, we eat sugar all the time. And your body preferentially uses that sugar.
Yeah.
So if you have it available, your body will never run out of it to run out of, let's don't go too technical. If you run out of sugar, your body will use the fat. If you have sugar available, your body will never use the fat.
Okay.
Your body will store the sugar as fat, and it will always have sugar in the bloodstream, and it will always store it as glycogen in your liver and your muscle cells, which is just short sugar chains that it can easily break down.
Okay.
It will always use that and break down those glycogen chains to keep your blood sugar high. It's not until you run out of glycogen, and realize this isn't an on-off switch. Okay, I'm making this basic. This is a curve, of course, but
for sure.
Glycogen. But your body will use the sugar if you have it available, and it will not burn fat. It's not until you run out of sugar and run out of that short-term stored sugar that your body will say, "Okay, we're running out of that. I'm going to start now mobilizing, using some of this fat that I have to use ketones for fuel and swap into that alternative fuel source."
Gotcha.
So what people do now is they never, ever do that. They never go into it because eating is fun. It tastes good. It makes you feel good.
Yep.
It sends signals to your brain, even though it doesn't make you feel good. Let's be clear. It doesn't make you feel good. It makes your brain feel good because it hits certain centers in your brain, which, by the way, the food industry has labs that are very specialized to pick which types of compounds will hit reward centers in your brain, by the way. But that's beside the point.
A whole different conversation. That's for part two.
Whole different conversation. So you have to get to the point where, okay, so what happens to people, and the reason that they think fasting is hunger, is they never do that. So they never have the mechanisms in place in their body to burn ketones.
Yeah.
At all. They haven't done it in decades, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they run out of short-term sugar. And then they start so their body doesn't have the sugar available, so they're at its energy deficit in that track, and then they don't have the ability to mobilize ketones very well because they haven't done it in 10 years. It's rusty, right? Yeah. You got to brush the cobwebs off of that whole pathway.
So if you eat until, like, say you have a midnight snack right before you go to bed, and then you wake up at 6 a.m., 8 a.m. and eat breakfast right away, then your body is never really burning any fat.
No.
Right.
No, ever. Never. Never. Yeah, never. You've got way too many carbs, because all those carbohydrates just went into short-term sugar storage, into glycogen. Yeah. That's the same thing that people do when they run marathons and they're like, I'm going to carb load. What carb loading is eating enough carbohydrates to fill up your liver and your muscle cells with glycogen, with short-term sugar storage, so that when they run the marathon, it's a lot longer. It takes a lot longer for them to run out of that glycogen before they have to actually start mobilizing ketones, which is less efficient in a certain, unless you're used to it.
Okay.
And so that's what carb loading is. And so you basically, you're carb loading every night. If you eat pizza, even at 8 o'clock PM, or pasta, let's say, your glycogen stores are full. It's going to take you a long time the next day to run out of glycogen. And that's when people start feeling hungry because they're running out of glycogen. So then they eat, right? Because they're feeling that their blood sugar is getting low, they're running out, so they eat and replenish it, and that's right when you were going to start burning ketones. So they never do it. So when they don't eat, they're at an energy deficit with the sugar, and then they're not efficient at burning the ketones. So they're at a total energy deficit because they're not able to burn the sugar efficiently because they don't have any. And they're not able to burn ketones efficiently because they haven't done it in 20 years or ever. Okay. Last time they fasted on accident and got sick. So they're at a total energy deficit. So then they feel hungry. They feel hangry. They get pissed. They're like, my body is freaking out. If I don't eat, I'm going to die. Literally. Yeah. Cortisol level shoots through the roof to increase your blood sugar, which makes you more insulin resistant. I mean, it's not good, right? So that's what, and then people are like, well, this fasting thing is for the birds, right? This is terrible.
Yeah.
The point is, you have to, and so what I do in my program and what I want people to realize is, and you don't have to join my program to do this. My point is, you need to slowly just pay attention to your eating windows and move them longer and longer until you actually are burning, until you can actually go a whole day without eating food and feeling awesome. Because here's the thing, once your body is used to that, you swap back and forth really well.
Yeah.
And that's metabolically flexible. That's what's called metabolic flexibility. The ability to swap back and forth between those two sources of fuel efficiently. And that's what you're supposed to do. It's like a hot potato. If you're always burning sugar all the time, your hand's going to burn. If you're always burning ketones all the time, your hand's going to burn because you're going to start burning protein for fuel and breaking down your muscle cells. You got to go back and forth. You find sugar, you use it. Then you run out of sugar, your body goes into cleaning mode. It goes into ketosis mode, right? You go back, you eat some food, it goes back to the other one. You have to keep going back and forth. It's supposed to be a cycle. You're supposed to be building, tearing down, building, tearing down. We just can't build all the time. What happens if we build all the time? Wouldn't everyone have disease? They would. Well, 75%+ of the population would, right?
And we know that, like, over the last 100 years, like you're saying. And
exactly. You
know, clearly our bodies.
And it took a couple of decades to catch up with people, by the way. Yeah. But like, yeah, that's yes.
And our bodies haven't evolved.
So that's what I want people to understand. You have got to get to where you can fast feeling good. Because what happens in my program when I work with people is I get them to this point where they can burn ketones efficiently, and then they feel awesome not eating food. And they're like, holy crap, where's this been my whole life? And then the conversation completely flips on its head, and I have to start talking them into eating. I have to say, look, you have to eat a certain amount of protein a day because you're going to break down your muscles. You have to eat to eat your vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients. You have to get this stuff in. You're going to, like, it's not healthy not to eat all the time. They're like, but this feels great. I get energy, I'm losing weight. Blah, blah, blah. I'm sleeping better. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, dude, but it's a cycle. You're holding the potato in the other hand.
Yeah.
You gotta throw them back and forth. You gotta eat, you gotta fast. You gotta eat, you gotta fast. Be metabolically flexible. If you do that, you'll feel way better all the time, and you'll reduce your risk for all the chronic diseases for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And by the way, all this stuff will, just to tie the back in, is all completely beneficial for brain health, for mindset, for mental health.
Yeah.
Because sleeping better and all this stuff and the cleaning out, you have this system in your brain that that cleans out toxins.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the glymphatic system. And you have, like, when your body looks for senescent cells to break down the things that are causing inflammation, causing inflammation in your brain, ketosis helps with all that stuff. And I've been really long-winded about this already, but that's what I'm passionate about. If I could give one lesson, I want people to understand that one concept, because that's the core of most stuff that's going on with most people in this country and other similar countries. It's insane.
I would really like to do a part two with you so we can get a little bit more in depth into that stuff and, like, how to actually make the changes, right? I mean, that's where, like I told you when we talked initially, like we're really big on balance, right? That's the mind, body, spirit connection. It's all one thing. You know, if you're not eating well, you're not sleeping well. If you're not sleeping well, then you're depressed and you're angry and you're all of these different things. So, you know, it all kind of leads into each other. And, you know, if we can find balance, within all of our systems, as far as that goes, then we will find a lot more health. And so
100%. Yeah. And that's why when I work with a client, we'll do all that stuff together, but you know, yeah, don't be mad at your primary care doctor. They don't have that ability, but that's what I do. That's different is like, we're able to see you holistically and all that. So, you know, if you don't have all that stuff, you don't need to work with me. I'm just saying the point is think about yourself as a bunch of systems together. And then realize that, yeah, like do the low hanging fruit, sleep well, have a habit of sleeping well. Mm-hmm. And then if you become metabolically flexible, you know, reevaluate after that, because I bet you feel awesome. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. And yeah. Just, you know, just a little reminder for you guys, like, you know, where the purpose here is not to sell anything to you. So if you're like, oh, this guy's trying to sell a program, that's not what we're here for. We're here to educate you, right? That's why I bring people like Zach on the podcast, so we can educate you. I can educate myself because I'm learning a lot too. And I'm really, really grateful for that and all of the information that Zach's got. That said, Zach does have a program to help you get deeper into this. So Zach, can you tell everyone a little bit more about that, where they can find you on social media, how they can get involved with you, if they can ask you questions and things like that?
Yeah, for sure. And I realized I didn't mean to like plug this program. The point is like, I have people like the people that I really want to work with are people that have a lot of things going on and they can't find answers for them, but they want to be walked through fixing their metabolic health and becoming more metabolically flexible. If you're just a guy that's a young guy that has the stuff, really just you don't just work on your sleep and work on your fasting, metabolic flexibility, and eat well, and those things will benefit you tremendously. That's really all you need to focus on at this point. If you have a question, email me. I get all my emails. I have email addresses everywhere, all over social media. I mean, you could just search my name on Instagram or Facebook or whatever. I have a group in Facebook, and just tag me. You can join my group in Facebook if you want to. There's like 6,500 people in it or something like that. Google my name or search it on the social media stuff and just email me. If you have a question, I'll answer it. I don't need, you know, and if you're a good fit for a program, then we can talk about that later. But I, you know, I work with people who have a lot, who have sleep stress, metabolic disease, and they want to be walked through a program to be metabolically flexible, cure. What I really love to do is cure people's type 2 diabetes and reverse their pre-diabetes. If you have those things, I want to work with you, cause I love that. And it's awesome.
Awesome.
If you're not there yet, I don't, you know, don't, I'm not trying to. Yeah. So
yeah,
just,
yeah. No,
just email me if you have a question. And so, and I want to help you. So you can find me on all the social media stuff and just let me know if you have any questions. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. And I want you to get business from this too. So that's important too. That's you know, it's twofold.
Well,
so if somebody does come to
you, I appreciate that, but that's great. If someone wants to help and they, what's that?
Oh, that's your Instagram.
Oh, you said,
Zach Wright.
I'm working on my Instagram. Yeah. It's not great. I got a lot more followers on Facebook for some reason, but you follow me on both those. Help me be another follower. And
absolutely.
Yeah, if you have prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, or you think you have metabolic disease and you want to get better, then let me know and I'll work with you. But other than that, just ask me whatever you need and I'll try to get to you.
You got it. Yeah, and hopefully I can get Zach on to do a part 2 so we can get a little deeper into these things. So.
I would love to do that. Yeah, I could talk about this stuff all day. So let me know.
Thank you so much for all the information. And again, if you guys have questions, hit Zach up. Really thank you all for joining us. And Zach, thank you for your time today. And we'll definitely talk soon.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate it a lot. See you later.
Cheers, man.
I want to thank you for venturing into the dark blue with us today, where we're always striving to foster a community of peers which empowers mental wellness, positive growth, and social awareness. If you like what we're doing and would like to support our community, you can purchase a pint glass or t-shirt from Sheath Underwear via the link on our merch tab at www.intothedarkblue.com or message us to make a one-time donation.
All proceeds go to Men's Mental Wellness Initiatives. If you ever need a listening ear, feel free to message us on the website or at @into_the_darkblue on Instagram. If you have an emergency or need help from a professional therapist, we offer several resources on our Get Help page. Last but not least, know your limits and drink smart. Cheers.